session number 10804, rule 1.
Mr. Fitzgerald, rule 1. When was it that you actually joined the Navy, please?
1936.
And why did you join up?
Good way of life, adventurous, what have you.
Was it easy to get in?
Yes, I think it was. Yes, it was. But the standard was pretty high, you know. We wanted the right people and...
What was your basic training like?
Good.
And where did it take place?
At Plymouth.
Why do you say it was so good?
Well, it covered everything and it was very thorough.
How were recruits treated in those days in basic training? Was it rough?
The discipline was.
Can you give any examples?
Well, for a small offence like not keeping yourself clean, or if you even your small box that you kept, known as a ditty box, if it was the slightest bit grubby, it was 6 or 7 hours. Extra drill in the parade ground with a rifle above your head.
Were you ever punished in that way?
Yes, I was. Somebody else did the dirty deed. Finger mark on the front of the box. But I suffered for it, and in the Navy you always did your punishment and complained afterwards. So there's no point in complaining.
It wouldn't have been listened to.
No, they just said, well, it's hard luck kind of thing. But I enjoyed it, it was good. I thoroughly enjoyed the Navy. All the time I was in the Navy, even though times was hard, I enjoyed it.
Did you think the discipline was fair, or did you resent it?
I thought it was fair.
Did you feel that the training fitted you for what was to come later, or did you think it had any deficiencies?
No, very much so. I thought it was good.
Did you become a seaman, or did you go into any specialist area?
I became a seaman, and with a AA2 gunnery rate, became a leading seaman with an AA2 gunnery rate.
When war broke out, had you expected it?
Well, it was talked about, and we had a year's... Before the war broke out, a year before the war broke out, I was attached to the 5th Submarine Flotilla at Devonport, and we made for Aberdeen with the 5th Submarine Flotilla, which comprised of Seahorse, Porpoise, Catchlot, Narwhal, and I think Starfish. We made for Aberdeen and formed a base at Aberdeen. This was a year before the war broke out. All ships were camouflaged, all brasswork on submarines was painted over, submarines were loaded with torpedoes, and we were ready to put to sea. But actually, they never broke out in 1938. So we went back to Plymouth and everything went back to normal. But from then onwards, everybody was more or less expecting something to happen.
Were you dismayed when the war was declared, or just philosophical?
Excited.
Looking forward to it?
In a way, it sounds a bit silly, but that's what you joined in there before, isn't it? It affects people in different ways. Some were nervous, some weren't.
Did you think that the German Navy was a match for the Royal Navy?
Yes.
Even at that time?
Even at that time.
Did you think the Royal Navy could handle the German Navy?
Yes. no point in being in the Royal Navy. You didn't think you could handle the German Navy.
Which ship were you on when war broke out?
I joined the Stoke 1939, either a week before or a week after war it was declared.
Can you repeat to me what you were telling me earlier about joining the Stoke, please?
I think the Admiralty got everything right in commissioning the Stoke. It comprised really of three different groups of men. The active service third, which I belonged. The third was a Merseyside RNVR, and the third was RFR, Royal Fleet Reserve, which combined to make experience and combined with the active service and the RNVR. And Liverpool RNVR were very good. They formed a guns crew and it was just as efficient and as good as the active service.
Can you tell me about the ship itself? What its characteristics were?
The ship itself was 1,060 tonne, I think. And we had 8 4-inch guns with 0.5 machine guns amidships, various Lewis guns throughout the ship, a couple on the bridge, and I think the top speed was about 18 to 20 knots.
What was it like to live and work aboard?
Well, the seaman's quarters was very cramped. The air was bad. Everything was damp. The food was rough. But sometimes there was 6 inches of water in the foremast deck if we had bad weather. But apart from that, it was a good seagoing ship.
And they were designed for what kind of function?
I think they were designed as ACAT cover for convoy duty, as well as anti-submarine, a combination of the two.
What kind of duties did you take up on Stoke when you first joined it? What kind of duties did the ship take up?
We were a green crew, so the first period was a working up period, which we went through various lowering boats, gunnery practice, picking up survivors, general efficiency.
Where were you doing all that?
North Sea or Channel.
Did you see anything of the enemy in that period?
Very little. We worked up for a period of short time, really, 3 weeks.
And then what?
And then we went on escort duty down the east coast. From Methil to Sheerness, mostly. Convoys of 30, 40 ships, mostly coasters. We were attacked either by German aircraft or E-boats. And every nightly or everyday occurrence, it was common.
This was the infamous E-boat alley?
I don't think it was known as Ebo Tally, but Ebo Tally was a little bit further south from Sheerness. Below that.
The Straits of Dover?
Yes, yeah.
And how much success did the enemy raiders have on the east coast?
Not a lot, but occasionally ship we did lose. Not probably lost, but damaged. Mostly damaged. We lost very few with mines because the channel was kept swept clear.
Why do you think the Germans didn't have all that much success then?
Well, I think they were probably a little bit apprehensive of coming too near. And sometimes we did have RAF cover, but there were very few fighters about at that time.
Were any of the German E-boats or planes destroyed? From your own observation?
No.
Was that because they were so hard to hit?
Yes, there's elements of surprise, and the E-boats was at night, and we must remember that we were very green at that time.
What was your own action station then?
I was a trainer on a B-twin 4-inch.
What's the job of a trainer involved?
That's to train the gun from left to right, or port to starboard. With a gun's crew of about 12. Gun layer, trainer, captain of the gun, fuse setters, and loading numbers.
Both the trainer and the layer point the gun, don't they? So what's the difference?
The gun layer lays the gun on the target from overhead to water level, and the trainer goes from port to starboard.
At right angles to what the layer's doing?
Yes. Actually, opposite movement. The turrets were controlled from the direction finder, which was above the bridge. Was in communication with the director. He gave ranges and fuse settings. Occasionally, if there was any breakdown of communications, then we had to go on to everything by hand, which was the training and firing from telescopes by the gun layer and the trainer.
How did you get the information on the gun then? How did it come to you? To giving you the order for training?
When the guns was under control of the director, it came through headphones. And the headphones was on the fuse setter, I believe. The captain of the gun actually fired the gun. He made the interceptor, and it was either fired from the director by electric circuit, or he could fire it by the gun layer, captain of the gun.
What rank would be in charge of the gun?
Leading seaman.
How long were you on these East Coast duties, approximately?
About a year, maybe a little longer.
And was it in that time that Captain Walker joined the ship?
Captain Walker joined the ship at Londonderry. And I think at that time we were just starting convoys from Liverpool to Gibraltar.
And it was in this period of East Coast convoys that you were hit by a torpedo at Methil, was it?
Yes.
Can you describe that incident?
We'd just completed a refit at Rosyth. Everything, the ship had been gone over, repainted. And we were a really nice looking ship when we left Rosyth. And we about 20 minutes, half hour sailing, we dropped anchor at Methil. At that time, it was about dusk, just coming dusk. And we were attacked by a German seaplane, I believe it was, who dropped a torpedo in the general direction of the convoy. And it struck the stoke, the quarterdeck, about the rudder between the two shafts. Destroyed the stern of the ship, blew the rudder off, and destroyed the two propellers, two shafts. Wrecked the cabins under the quarterdeck. Unfortunately, no one was killed. The depth charges, which had been set to safe, fortunately, by a conscientious torpedo man who used to do the depth charges. And the depth charges finished up about 50 feet in the air above the ship and dropped off the forecastle. There'd be about 12 depth charges or even more. But with them being set to safe, they didn't explode. So it was very fortunate.
And the ship just, the plane just came in and out?
Just came in and it was all over in minutes.
Did you see the plane?
I saw the plane, but it was on its way out. We're just sitting down to supper. We dropped anchor, all the crew were sat down to supper. Alarm bells went, everybody dashing up on the upper deck. By the time we got on the upper deck, the torpedo struck. About that time, the plane was full throttle and away.
Were there any other incidents on the East Coast convoys that stick out in your mind?
Yes, we lost several ships. I remember one, a tanker, the British Triumph off the Humber. We picked up several bodies from that. And an incident of an Avro Anson who was mine-spotting for the convoy was shot down by one of our own planes, a Spitfire, unfortunately. But it was full of incident down the East Coast. It was always alerts and closing up action stations. It was a regular thing.
Can you tell me about Captain Walker now, how he joined the ship and what kind of an impression he made?
Captain Walker joined the ship at Londonderry. I think it was Commander Walker. No one had heard of him and no one knew anything about him. It was just a question of the new skippers aboard and what do they call him? Walker, well. But from the day that Captain Walker joined the stoke, everything changed in the ship. He was a very likeable man and a very efficient man, and all the crew thought the world of him.
Did he ever discipline you?
No, I don't think he did. I was never in trouble in the Navy.
How much would you see of him on the ship?
Oh, quite a lot. At sea, you saw quite a lot of him. He was always on the bridge, very an active man, and I can't speak too highly of him.
Would he take an interest in individual members of the crew?
Oh, yes, certainly. If you had any problems, if you had any trouble at home, marriage problems, you could always go to him and he would be very fair. And if it called for a couple of days leave, then you were certain to get it.
From the professional point of view, from the point of view of how he did his job of U-boat hunting and so on, why do you think that he has become so famous?
Well, he was the first man to really to create a really good escort group. I think it was a 36 escort group, and it was a combination of probably one destroyer, two frigates, and several flower class corvettes. And we worked up so that more or less everyone knew his job from ship to ship escort duty.
Now, you said that once he joined, you started going to Gibraltar. Is that right?
Liverpool to Gibraltar, yes. And we took an average of 40 to 50 ships at an 8-knot convoy, which was very slow. Sometimes took us 3 weeks or even longer. We had to go 800 to 1,000 miles west to try the Missy U-boats, running parallel the coast of America and then back into the Straits of Gibraltar.
Which period was this? Can you recollect any approximate dates?
1940, back end of 1940, 41, into 42, I would say, as far as I can remember.
Did the Stork get any U-boat kills during that period whilst you were on it?
Yes. I think we had six kills, three in one convoy. We destroyed one U-boat by shell fire and ramming. Picked up a few, four or five survivors. We destroyed another U-boat by depth charges and picked up remains, bodies of German crew, the heart and lungs of a German U-boat sailor, which we took back aboard the Stork and was pickled in alcohol by the doctor. And when we arrived at Gibraltar, the captains of the convoy were invited aboard the Stork to view the remains. It gave the captains of the merchant fleet a bit of a boost to know that we were doing something about the U-boat attacks.
Can you describe the incident in which you opened fire on the U-boat on the surface and rammed it? Did you actually see it yourself?
Oh yes, I opened fire on the U-boat. Actually, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we'd had several skirmishes with U-boats, depth charging and star shell firing. And we was in communication with a Stanley, which was American four-funneled destroyer, part of the Less Lend and Lease program. And she was in communication with the Stork, saying that she was in contact with a U-boat, and the U-boat had fired torpedoes. The next minute, the Stanley exploded. She'd caught two torpedoes and was destroyed in seconds. The other two torpedoes passed to our stern, and we circled round behind the Stanley and picked up the echo of the U-boat. We attacked the U-boat were several patterns of depth charges. Eventually, the U-boat came to the surface and we followed it round in two or three circles, it turning inside our circle. We then drew to port or starboard and opened fire on the U-boat. I think one hit was recorded, and by this time Captain Walker announced stand by to ram. The crew took appropriate action and we rammed the U-boat amidships. The U-boat rolled over under the stalk, partly lifting the stalk out of the water as we overrode her. We pushed 12 foot of the bows back of the stalk, but hauled the U-boat. The U-boat then came out of the water in a vertical position with about 20 of the U-boat in the air, stood out vertical, with U-boat survivors jumping out, screaming and shouting and hauling life belts. The machine, .5 machine gunner amidships opened fire on the U-boat, which was too close for us to get at, kind of thing. Opened fire on the U-boat and everybody was diving with cover. There was .5 bullets ricocheting all over the place. But anyway, we did pick up, I think it was 6 survivors from the U-boats. One of the names I remember quite well was Wilhelm Wertz, who lived just outside Hamburg. Later on in the convoy duties, we were rammed by the Deptford through the quarterdeck, killing 2 of the U-boat survivors. Captain Walker came back to look at the damage and immediately fell through the hole in the quarterdeck among the remains of the Germans. He was dragged out and none the worse for his experience. But by this time the stalk was in a bit of a state with 12 foot of the bows push back, and now a great gash in the quarterdeck.
I think you said 2 Germans were killed.
Two Germans were killed.